This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to This Week in the NFL, week 11. Season's flying by. Season is flying by. We had a really exciting week 10 that we can't wait to go over, and some good matchups coming up in week 11. I'm your host, as always, the Cowboy, joined by my co-host and friend till the end, Hakuna Matata, John D'Amato. How you doing, John?
Yeah, buddy. I'm all right, man. We had a lot of great games to go over this past week. Thursday, Sunday night especially, and Monday night. They're prime time. They really saved the best for prime time.
Very big impressive. Time, big time. So with Disney Plus launching, John, any, kind of like, you got a favorite Disney song, princess, anything like that?
One of my favorite Disney movies. As a matter of fact, it's the only thing I've had time to watch. We're only a couple days in. It was, you ever seen Gus? The field goal kicking mule. It's a football movie. The mule joins the NFL from Yugoslavia.
That's a
it's tremendous.
That's not what I was expecting you to come out with. That's fantastic.
It does have a great cast. Ed Asner's in it. Tom Bosley, Tim Conway, Don Knotts. It's tremendous. It's one of my favorites. A mule, and I have a lot of. They actually Dick Butkus plays the villain in it, and. The team he was on was made up, but they actually play real teams in there.
Nice.
They had real NFL licenses, yeah.
Nice, yeah. I'm going to check that out. I forgot about that. That's great. All right, man. So we had a great weekend of football. Right, we're recording on a Wednesday for once, so we could actually preview the Thursday game for you, which is nice. But let's just start, John. Want to just start with probably the game of the season so far. I think pretty clearly the game of the season so far. You have Seattle at San Francisco. San Francisco undefeated. Seattle coming in hot with MVP front runner Russell Wilson, and this game was just bananas. Bananas. Each team looked like they had won and lost two or three times. And Seattle pulls it out in the end. And very interesting, John. I mean, just talking about the overtime, we were talking during the game. And when Carroll punted with a minute and a half left from the 50 on 4th and 2 with no timeouts, I made the remark, oh, I'm surprised he's playing for the tie. When what we didn't know was that old Kyle has never really been great at killing the clock, John. That's not Kyle's thing. 3 incompletes in a row. No time comes off the clock. San Fran punts it back to Seattle, and Seattle comes down and kicks the game-winning field goal. So shows we never know. What were your takeaways from this game?
There's so much. We could do a whole show on this game. Fascinating. A lot of twists and turns. But, Kyle, I think if he was on the road, he would have been smarter and played for that tie. I think he got caught up too much in the home. What if you run the ball and you're going to hear like maybe boos or the crowd, which you should never listen to. You never listen to the fans. Otherwise, you'd be sitting with them. I think that was a famous Parcells quote. But, he definitely, with a 2-game lead, he should have looked at the big picture. And played for that tie, and because it turns out now they're only 1 game ahead, and with a lot of tough games, they might be losing that first place lead. But he got too caught up in staying undefeated, which is never going to happen. They got tough games down the road. They're going to lose, even if they won that game, they would still they're still going to lose the 3 or 4 games. They're going to be 12-4, 13-3. So he definitely got too caught up, and especially Jimmy G was shaky. A lot of his passes were off. He could have been intercepted. He could have had 4 or 5 picks that Seattle had their hands on. and his receivers, the kid Bourne was dropping passes left and right. He didn't have his guy Kittle in there.
Or see, yeah, with Emmanuel Sanders getting hurt too.
Or even he should have at least went halfway. Okay, maybe on second down or first down, try a draw play. And maybe that'll give you a 10 or 20 yards. And then you could work from some advantage where hey, we could still try to pass a couple times and it's not going to hurt us. So we're either going to get the tie or we're going to get out of here and put out a W.
With Seattle with no timeouts, I mean, at the very least, you run like a screen or something on first down, you know, just to your point, make it so you're either going to – it's either a tie or a win. You can't it's kind of difficult. You can't – it's bad. Just bad clock management to lose that game when you're in that situation. And I mean, once Wilson was getting it back, I mean, I don't know about you, but I had like little to no doubt in my mind that they were gonna come down and kick that field goal.
Yep, Josh Gordon, a couple big plays, your boy. Good to see that.
He's a really good player, man. I mean, he doesn't have quite have the speed that he had when he was younger. And had, you know, I mean, he was like a Calvin Johnson at that point. But, I mean, he's such a physical presence out there that on those slant routes and stuff, I mean, he's, you know, he's almost impossible to defend because you still have to respect his speed a little. You can't just, you know, play right up on him. And he's just so big. He's a tank that it's a nice little weapon for Wilson to have. And, I mean, even without Lockett, when you have Gordon and Metcalf, are probably like the two most physically imposing receivers in the whole NFL. Like both of those guys could win like bodybuilding contests. They are huge.
Another thing, Cowboy, after do a mea culpa, I had kind of crapped on the Seahawks defense who was giving up a lot of points. And even still, so the 49ers didn't have Kittle. And there were a lot of drop passes that Bourne kid. If he made a couple more plays, it would have they would have had a lot more yards that Seattle would have given up. But Clowney really emerged. This is his first game since the trade where he played like the dominant force he could be. He's probably been cooling off and just chilling. And now he's going to make that contract rush and he's going to be a beast that. For the rest of the season, and he just took over this game. He dominated. He was in on every pass rush. So kudos to them. Maybe the Legion of Boom. I called them the Legion of Bums last week. Got to do a mea culpa because they really stepped up.
They were opportunistic, right? I mean, they gave up some yards, but
yeah.
They got the turnovers. Clowney was all over the place, like you said.
As you said, the game shouldn't have been close because really the play that turned it around and then turned it into an overtime game was when Wilson fumbled and the offensive lineman. I mean, come on, just fall on the ball when the ball pops in your hand. I mean, he hasn't handled the ball since probably when he was 10 years old. And Pop Warner, big offensive lineman. Trey, what are you gonna do? You gonna run and make the first down? Yeah, that was.
It was a weird play because in real time it almost looked like the lineman like took it out of his hand.
Yeah, yeah, like what the fuck is he doing? Yeah, just fall on it, dude. He hasn't touched the ball since Pop Warner. Yeah, so yeah, you know.
Agreed.
That was a fluky play, but also on the flip side, the 49ers. It was a shocking when they were down three and you got the rookie kick of McLaughlin. That was a huge kick and he friggin' splits the uprights. He kicked it without any pressure, like he was cool, like he was a 10-year veteran, and there was more pressure on that kick. And then when he had the chance to win it in overtime, he hooks it 100 yards to right. I don't understand that. There was less pressure on the kick because that kick you still had a chance to win the game, which they did. They got the ball back, but it just goes to show you that's another thing you can never figure out. We talked about it in our other show about how middle relief pitchers in baseball are like, you know, flipping a coin or going to the freaking Ouija board. That's the same thing in the NFL with kickers. You can do everything right and coach perfectly, but man, other than like the top four or five kickers, everybody else is a crapshoot, and that kid just showed it.
And you know, with the second kick, I thought he was definitely going to make it.
Yeah,
usually
because
usually it's
first
like
one had more pressure.
And you think of it like free throws, right? Yeah. Like real pressure free throws. Usually if they make the first one, they always make the second one. It's the first one that's always the tough one. But yeah, I mean He went full Vinatieri on that second kick. Just...
Yeah, it landed somewhere in Anaheim from San Francisco. Yeah, that was a rough one.
So the Niners with, I mean, Garoppolo was real shaky in this game. I know he didn't have all his weapons.
Yeah, but... without Kittle, Kittle's his security blanket. So, but still, Booger McFarland did a great job. It was he kept pointing out how skitterish Jimmy was. Every time he got the rush, he would just kind of a little panicky, throwing off the back foot,
or just dropping the ball. Like, yeah, I mean, that fumble. Yeah. I mean, it's dropped the ball. Like he needs to tighten it up a little bit. I think for them to really, really, you know, to really be to win the Super Bowl, right? For them to win the Super Bowl, he's got to play better than he did in that game.
Yeah, his big games are coming against like the Cardinals and soft defenses. He's got to prove he could do it versus a legit D. Otherwise, you know, because most of the other games they relied on their running game.
Speaking of which, he does have the for the second time in 3 weeks. It's Cardinals Niners. This one in San Francisco. Gotta like the Niners to bounce back there. You know, they're going to be coming in. Probably the worst thing for the Cardinals is that the Niners lost that game the way they did. They're going to be coming in fired up and ready to roll.
Oh yeah, it will be a huge upset. The Niners are favored by double digits, so they should. This is a good spot for them to bounce back. They beat the Cardinals already, so
they did. It was close. They beat them by three. So the other game of the week, really, in my mind, was Minnesota at Dallas Sunday night.
Yep, another primetime special, and it was a special game.
So, what were your takeaways there?
My takeaways there. This was Zimmer's dream game, where just relying on Dalvin Cook. Don't give Cousins too much responsibility, especially without Adam Thielen. And you can sum up the game. This is not the same Dallas defense as last year. A lot of the big guys like Jalen Smith and Van Der Esch, they're not as impactful as they were last year. And that one drive proved it, where Minnesota ran the ball 10 straight times and just ran it right down the gut. That's just like, it was just a soul crushing drive where you just run, and they got right in there. And that was the key to the game. And then at the end of the game, you saw Dallas had 2nd and 2. You figure, oh, this is going to be a layup. They're going in, and on 2nd and 2, I don't really get on the play call. And you give it to Zeke, and odds, you give it to Zeke twice in a row, and odds are he's going to get the 2 yards. But so the first one got nothing, and then on 3rd down, I don't doubt him. I'm not going to be on him. But a rare instance where Zeke lost 3 yards, and instead of 3rd and 2, it comes 4th and 5, and then they tried to pass to Zeke, and the kid Kendricks made a great play. But you know, that Dallas fans are crying about the coordinator stuff, but I don't think that has merit to it. I don't mind the play calling there. How often does Zeke Elliott, at worst, he usually gets 2-3 yards? So you know, I would give it to him twice. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, he really, really hadn't been able to run the whole game, and Dak was playing. I mean, lights out. That's one of his best games as a pro. Maybe it was his best game as a pro. He gets you down there. I could see it on 2nd down. I didn't like it on 3rd down after he got stuffed on 2nd down.
Yeah. But twice in a row, I can understand. Maybe just once. And probably, you know, at least give it Dak a better option where he could run a pass.
Yeah, and then the play that they ran on 4th down, like, I mean, I think I've watched just about every second of Cowboys football. I don't recall them running that play once, like a little 3-yard out pattern to Elliott. It's a, I mean, Minnesota played well. It's a tough loss for the Cowboys. I feel like it's a game they probably should have won. They kind of came out flat. And... you know, by the time, you know, you turn around, you're down 14 zip. But I think they'll be back. I mean, It's a big win for Minnesota. A big win for Cousins to get the monkey off his back. I know. I mean, he didn't set the world on fire, but he didn't turn it over. Right? Didn't turn it over. Managed them to a victory.
Yeah. Now you got to question Dallas now, because look at their wins. Other than the Eagles, two Giants, Redskins, and Dolphins. Is that impressive?
Well, you know, when the Giants are the next best team you beat, it's not saying much.
I would argue that. It's probably the Dolphins are probably the next best team to beat.
It's close.
Yeah, we'll table that discussion for another decade.
So the Cowboys, really a must win this week. And it's not an easy game. They're at Detroit. So Stafford practiced today. So somehow he has fractured in his back. And it looks like he'll probably only miss 1 week. So if you're Dallas, if you lose this one, you're going to New England the following week, which is a very, very difficult game. And so, you know, you're staring 5-6 in the face. So at Detroit, if Stafford plays, I mean, I think that game's a toss-up, really.
The Detroit defense seems to be softening, though, week by week. I still look for Dallas to pull it out. But I kind of disagree with the must win a little, because Philly's got New England this week and Seattle next week, and then their schedule softens up. But still, it'll most likely come down to that second game in Philly, that second Dallas-Philly game.
And then to decide it. To determine who's going to go 9-7 and win the division.
Yep. That's what it's looking at. Although Philly, after this Dallas-Seattle stretch, if Philly could get one of these between Dallas and Seattle, and they're both at home, New England-Seattle, if Philly could get one of them, they can be in good shape. Because Dallas still has to play New England.
You know, Peterson knows, you know, he's got the Pats number, right?
Oh, boy. The Philly special.
So we can talk about that game.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Pats, Eagles. You got Philly coming, two first place teams, one a little more tenuous than the other. Pats coming in off a loss. Off a loss, yes, but also coming in off their bye week. And Philly is as well. Belichick's record coming off a bye week is very, very good. Games in New England. By all accounts, the Patriots are the better team.
Sorry, Roger. It's in Philly.
Oh, my bad. My bad. It is in Phily. I'm sorry about that, guys. The Cowboys game's in New England. By all accounts, the Patriots, I don't think it matters. By all accounts, the Patriots are the better team. This is the game, John. You know how you said that when they lost to Baltimore, that it was going to, you know, ring the alarm? This is, you know, if they lose this one, the alarm, you know, it's going to be a 5-alarm fire here in New England. So, I like the Patriots to win. I think what it really comes down to is Philly's, like, inability on defense to stop the pass. Like, it's a real bad weakness to have against certain teams. And the Pats with, like, you know, with the Sanu and Edelman types, quick guys, really, really carve Philly up. So I think Philly is not going to be able to stop the Patriots. And the Pats D, Philly's offense has been good. I do like the Pats D, they're kind of Achilles heel is, like, quickness out of the backfield. So I think Miles Sanders from Philly could be an interesting guy this week, could be a weapon for them. But in general, I don't think they're going to be able to, Philly's going to be able to stop the Patriots enough to make it really a close game. So I like the Patriots by 14-21, somewhere in there.
I think it's going to be a little tighter, but I'll lean towards New England. But Jordan Howard, too, for the Eagles, might give Patriots some problems. But they're both coming off the bye. But I like Bill's record with coming off the bye. And the Patriots in a tight one-score game.
All right. So that'll be the 4 o'clock game for us this week, John.
Yeah, I'm sure most of the country will be getting that one.
I mean, as much as I'd like to see Cincinnati, Oakland. We love you, Raiders. We love you, Raiders.
Did Finley impress you at all? Are the Bengals still going to be in the market for one of these Burrow or Tua?
I told
or Tua.
You that.
Yeah. From what little I saw.
I was sure about that one. I think, didn't I say the score was going to be 31-3 or something like that? I think I did.
Yeah, from what little I saw, Mr. Finley, I don't think he changed much minds about who the way the Bengals are going to go with
it's a friggin' impossible situation for the kid. Like, really, what rookie quarterback were you going to toss into that game who was going to have a chance, right? I mean, they took the ball out of his hands. They're down by 25 points the whole game, and I think Joe Mixon still got 30 carries. Right? Am I right? I think he literally got 30 carries. Yeah, 30 carries in a game that they lost 49-13 and were down 14-0 in the first quarter. So the Bengals are what they are. They have the inside track for the number one overall pick, and I think they're going for it. There's no doubt in my mind that Mr. Finley gives them less of a chance to win than Andy Dalton would, as much as Andy Dalton's not exactly Joe Montana back there. He is probably more competent than Finley, who went 16 for 30 with a pick six. And 16 for 30 when you throw the ball fucking 5 yards downfield the whole game is not great. The real story in that game is Lamar. Oof.
Yeah.
We haven't seen much like him, have we, John?
Nah, and that highlight play, all of a sudden the experts are starting to say, oh, Lamar Jackson, he's a top MVP, game. You know, some stuff that we've been saying for like, since like week three, we've been touting Lamar Jackson.
It's going to be a fun little race with him and, if he keeps Russell, it up with him and Wilson for MVP, because, I mean, this kid, I mean, he's the real deal. I know the Bengals defense sucks, but he's doing it on a week-in, week-out basis. He did it to the Patriots. And he's played a full 16 games now, so you would think, you know, because sometimes these guys, like, once the tape gets out, as they say. But I think he's just, like, improved so much as a passer that it's really, like, what are you going to do? Because to stop him from running, you kind of got to put, like, 8 or 9 guys in the box. And if you do that, he can beat you passing now. So, I mean, he's a real difficult guy to defend. And what I really like about him is he has all these rushing attempts, right? I mean, I think just his rushing, he would be like the fourth or fifth best running back in the NFL.
Right.
But he doesn't take a ton of hits. Like, it seems like he like really knows how to protect his body. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't take any hits, but he's just such a good athlete that he's kind of just gliding around out there, and man, what a player! Their schedule is very difficult for the next 4 weeks. I think we'll find out a lot about them. So the Ravens have won 5 games in a row. Now they had their home for Houston this week, which is a difficult game. Then at the Rams, which I guess was more difficult. It seemed we'll talk about them. Then home for the 49ers and at Buffalo. So that's a tough little stretch there. But the way they're playing, I mean, 3-1 or even 4-0 is not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and going to what you're saying about Jackson, you don't get the feeling it's like that the defenses are going to catch on soon like they did with the similar guys who had success like him in the past with like your Kaepernicks and your RG3s. It's a different type of offense under Greg Roman, who's going to be a top candidate for one of these dead man walking coaches that are going to be leaving. I won't be surprised if Roman's probably get a job next year.
But I think one thing, I think Jackson is just, I think he's more athletic. I mean, and those guys are great athletes. Don't get me wrong, but I think he's more athletic than them. Like, they were good runners. I mean, he is like, I mean, he's a phenomenal runner, right? I mean, in the open field, I mean, he's like as a quarterback, the only other guy that I can compare him to from a running perspective is Vic, right? He reminds me of Vic when he's running. And as a passer, it's like the thing with Vic, he was a gambler and he'd make a lot of stupid throws.
Yeah, that's the big thing right there, the decision making.
Right. I mean, this kid's willing to check it down, not make the dumb throws downfield, knowing that he can live to fight another day and that the big plays are going to come.
Yeah, he's got only five picks. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, having Mark Ingram helps too. I mean, he's that read option is just brutal to defend. Like, I mean, you just pick your poison. But I hate to be like the bandwagon guy because, like you said, everybody's on Lamar Jackson now. We've been on him, and I mean, I think you really have to sit and think long and hard about them as like a Super Bowl favorite coming out of the AFC. I mean, I think I would say for the Patriots, and if they could say there's one team that we want no part of in the playoffs, it's definitely the Ravens. Harbaugh's got a good history there, and obviously they just beat him.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how they handle that tough stretch of games, because I didn't like how their defense played those first few weeks, and also they have on the board they do have a loss against the Browns, so let's keep that in mind.
They do. I mean, that they have a nice win at Seattle by double digits. I mean, that's,
yeah, and New England, sure. So that kind of cancel each other out, sure.
And I mean, they hung right with the Chiefs too in Kansas City. I mean, it's a fun team, and he's the kind of guy, man. I mean, he's another guy, no off the field bullshit. He's a good kid, you know. He seems like a good kid.
Yeah, like that's what comes down to the decision making. That's what it comes down to. He seems to be very intelligent and makes the right decisions.
So, real exciting stuff. Real exciting stuff with a guy like that. So, with all that said, do you like them at home against Houston this week?
Yes, I do.
Because that really is not an easy game.
No, Houston coming off a bye, and their defense looked real good. Losing Watt, they exposed Minshew magic. They exposed his tricks. And,
he's done.
Yeah, well, for this year, who knows? It might be a couple games if Foles gets hurt again. But yeah, they dominated Jacksonville and defensively.
It's an interesting situation for Jacksonville, because that kid did prove that he could play in the NFL. I mean, he proved that he's only a rookie, but at the very least, he's probably like a mid-level starter eventually, yeah. Right? Like, yeah, do you try to move Foles in the offseason so that you have the kid with who you're not paying anything to and go with that strategy?
Yeah, if they got somebody to take them, but they paid the Foles that money. So plus they don't want to. It wasn't like Foles was playing horribly before he got hurt. So they're going with the you don't lose your job because of injury. They're going by that, and plus it can only be in their favor because you have two chips to bargain with.
Right. So I also like Baltimore at home in that one. I think they'll turn Watson over a couple of times. That defense is, and that's the other thing. Baltimore's defense had been pretty shoddy up until that Cleveland game, and has really pulled it together since then. I look for that to continue this week, and I like them. I like them against Houston as well, John.
Yeah, I'm only going the Ravens by a slight margin because of the home field. But the Texans are in the same boat. Their defense has been kind of soft all year, too, before that Jacksonville game. So it's going to be a great matchup. That'll dominate the 1 o'clock schedule there.
I know. I mean, it's going to be tough to turn off Jets-Redskins. But... But if I guess I'll flip off on the commercials. So we did this last week, John.
The piss break games.
Well, I want you to Take a look at the games. What do you think the highest price is of a minimum ticket this week?
The New England.
That's correct.
New England at Philly.
Lowest price you can get in for is $236.
Okay.
Can you take a stab at what the lowest price is for Jets Redskins?
Wait, what'd you say the highest was for New England?
$236. That's the lowest. The worst seats in the house are $236.
I'll go with the same thing for the Redskins. Just move the decimal point between the two and the three. $2.36.
You're close. $7. So, literally, Jets Redskins. You can get into the game for half of what your first beer will cost you inside the game.
Don't forget the fees, though. You know those pesky fees.
Yes. So that becomes $7.70 now. I don't know who that gets passed on to. But it is what, you know. It's all part of the deal. So I want to talk a little bit, not for long, but just because of what came out today about the Jets. So they beat the Giants, and I mean, it's a fairly exciting game because there wasn't a lot of defense. But can you think of any rational explanation that the Jets owner would come out today when the team is very much, I mean, they're in shambles, right? I mean, they're a disaster. I know they got a win, but I mean, they're an unmitigated disaster this year. Why the owner comes out and not only says that Adam Gase is safe for 2019, but that he's safe for 2020 as well. Like, do you look at that as the dreaded vote of confidence where it means they're kind of thinking about letting him go? Or do you just take it at face value? Because for me, it's like, why would you say it if you didn't mean it? Because you're just going to look like an asshole if you fire him now, right?
Yeah, but that's the owner. That's who the owner hired, and he doesn't want to. He's not gonna cut bait in the middle of the season, or even after one season when you didn't give him the tools to work with.
Didn't give him the tools.
We say it every week. I don't want to be repetitive, but that offensive line is non-competitive. Nobody could win with that. Even your boy Brady, he might have won a couple more games than Donald, but that offensive line is non-competitive. That secondary, where they had to put up with all the mess that McCagnan made with guys like Trumaine Johnson and bums like that. So that's not a competitive team. The first week they put out a kicker who couldn't even kick. The guy will never kick in the league again, and that cost them. It turned out they lost the game by 1 point. So there's a lot of mistakes, whether it's Gase or roster decisions that they didn't put him in a position to win. So that's the owner's hire, and the owner doesn't want to admit that he made a mistake by firing him and halfway through a season or after one season. And not only that, he probably doesn't have anybody in line. Usually, if you're going to fire a guy middle of the season or halfway, you get Greg Williams will just be an interim guy. But I don't think he has. If he had a guy, that he knew, like if he knew like Harbaugh or something will come out of college. If he knew that one of those studs, one of the big hot shots coming out of college, if he knew for a definite, then maybe he wouldn't have said that.
And I agree. After a year,
but he's not going to that. He's going to stick with his guy, and he's going to give him a fair chance.
And we talked about the firing in midseason. I get that,
And also, there's that dynamic where he kind of hired. He was hired before the GM, and they're tight and all that. So and he had a say in hiring Douglas. So. The owner wants to give those two, a chance in the offseason to work together and make it happen. And then he'll be on watch for next year. Because as we spoke last week, it used to be that coaches got 3 years. But now I think that's down to two. And especially the team that the Jets beat Sunday. I think that it's gonna prove that's gonna be a two and done. Because that game turned out to be like a loser leaves town match, where last week everybody was talking about the Jets coach being fired, and this week because the Jets won, this week it's turned to Sherman now. They're talking about how long he's gonna, get fired.
I know. I mean, I feel like the Jets had higher expectations coming into the season than the Giants, especially with the Giants turning to dimes so quickly, right? I mean, they're not expected to win this year.
But that was fool's gold, because they, you signed Le'Veon Bell, crowded. They signed a lot of position guys, but
CJ
once again,
Mosley.
they neglected. So that's another thing. Injuries too. You don't want to can a guy because you lost your top defensive guy. At least give your coach a fair shake. If he lost with all his top players playing. Sure, then you cut bait, but they didn't see it like that. They didn't put him in a position. They didn't handle the trenches like we always said. They ignored the offensive end and defensive lines.
All right, so I feel like it was unnecessary to give him the vote of confidence for 2020 as well. But I do see your point, John.
And also, the owner knew that this was the best time to finally speak up, because it might be the only time. It's good to speak up
only
after
time
a
they
win.
Won.
Yes.
Well, that's fair. But
it doesn't say much for the owner too, because he's really only like a substitute owner. The real owner is working for our esteemed POTUS, and his brother. That's just his little brother is kind of taking over at the moment. So we'll see what happens.
Good point. Good point, John. As always, just right on point.
Well, in New York, I get to hear about all the nonsense about dysfunction, between one week it's the Giants or the Jets, one week it's both or whatever.
So, John, how about what happened in New Orleans?
Wow, that was just...
Talk about a stunner, huh?
Yeah, I think that's just one of those games. Every team's at a stinker. We talked about the Ravens, how they lost to the Browns. And every team, once in a while, you just pull out a stinker. I mean... 9 points. That was the least Drew Brees has ever put up at home in his career. They fell flat. But also, the Falcons got a little spark. Something we had mentioned before. Quinn gave up the reins of the defensive reins so he could concentrate on coaching, and he gave up the defensive play calling. And that helped him. And guys like Grady Jarrett showed up for the first time since that Super Bowl year. And made a couple of sacks. The defense was all over. They didn't sack the quarterback. I think it was like 4 or 5 straight games. They went through a stretch, and they were all over Brees. It was just one of those things that one last juice. A crappy team like the Falcons, one of their rivals comes in, or in this case, they go to their home, and then they get fired up, and they play their best game. And the Falcons will probably go back to the Shitsville and losing, and they'll finish off their 4-12 and get Quinn fired. But at least they gave him one moment of glory here.
I mean, that defense played real well, and I mean, if you watch the game, I mean, the Falcons kind of tried to give it to him on offense. I mean, they got the ball back, right? 17, was it? I forget exactly what the score was, but. Basically, the game seemed like it was. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Raj.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. The game seemed like it was over, and Matt Ryan threw a pick on a pass he should have never thrown with about 4 minutes left, and then the defense just came out and stopped him again. So, yeah, weird thing. I mean, it's a weird thing with the Falcons too, because I mean, they, from a roster standpoint, it looked like they're a talented team. So. They come in 1-7, but it's not like not like a team like the Jets or Miami or somebody going in there where you think they just where they have no chance. It's just the way they had played. You would think they would get whacked, and good for them. A lot of history there. Good for the Falcons for not laying down.
Yeah, they got guys like Beasley and Grady Jarrett who were top defensive players, but they haven't played like that this year. And even on offense, Julio Jones and Hooper has having a great year at the tight end.
Yeah, now Hooper's hurt. Hooper's out for a month.
Those city hands, he couldn't stay.
New Orleans looking to bounce back with, it's not a gimme at Tampa. Historically, Breeze not as good on grass, right?
Yeah, Tampa gives them some problems, but Tampa's defense hasn't stopped anybody all year.
So you would think that'll be a pretty high-scoring game.
Yeah, it's going to be a get-right game for New Orleans. I don't see them dropping two in a row to less-than-stellar division rivals here.
We'll see. There's still time for my New Orleans doesn't make the playoffs prediction to come through. They have to lose out, I would say.
That's a good transition because your Panthers could have stepped up and caught a game, but a valiant effort, I might say. They came up a little short. And that's another. I may have to turn the corner on your boy Kyle Allen.
It was a heck of a drive.
Oh, what are you kidding me? In a snowstorm, taking him 90 yards to the 1-inch line. He came up an inch short in Green Bay in a snowstorm. That kid showed a lot of moxie. He doesn't really have a strong arm. He doesn't, make a lot of plays over, 15, 20 yards, but the kid showed a lot of balls. He's got that little extra that I'm starting to see where you guys are coming from, where you guys are talking about transitioning Cam and giving him the reins. That was a game like that where he really showed he can handle it.
I mean, it looks like Cam's done there. And as much as, it's just the injuries, right? Yeah, if he's not healthy, he's not worth anywhere near the amount of money that he's making. Especially, like, with the blueprint for victory, right? If you can get a quarterback, I'm not saying Kyle Allen is the next Tom Brady or anything, but he's competent. Right, if you can get a competent quarterback that makes just no money like that, I mean, they if they can move on from Cam and find a willing trade partner, I mean, they can really surround this kid with a bunch of weapons, and they already have some in place, obviously, and they can beef up their defense and make a run.
Yeah, if he continues like that,
So the rumors, hot and heavy rumors, Cam to Chicago. What do you think?
Well, can they fit him under the cap? The Bears, they got to pay Khalil Mack and others, but that would be according to the same rumors. That's where Cam wants to go.
So what Cam's saying is, he's looking around the league and he's saying, "Who am I better than, even on 1 foot?" And there's one guy, baby. Big Mitch.
Mitch the bitch.
Do you think Chicago, I mean, because you make that deal, I mean, it's Trubisky's done, right? I mean, you're throwing in the towel saying we made the worst draft mistake since Sam Bowie. Do you think they're willing to do that yet?
Not yet. They're still 4-5. They can still make a run of salvage this season.
He actually played like his best game of the year this week. The Matt Stafford got scratched at the last second. And Mitch, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Not a ton of yardage, but 3 touchdowns, no picks. That's good for Mitch. Foley fumbled once. They recovered it.
It was a soft Lions defense. So.
It was a very soft Lions defense. Cause
a lazy Patricia defense.
It's interesting, because of Matt. So a little bit of a tougher challenge. Oh, this is great. This is great. I want to talk about this game. So we have the night game, the Sunday night game this week is those Bears, the battle of the high first round quarterbacks who look like shit We have the Bear, Mitch's Bears going to the your defending NFC champion Rams and Jared Goff in a rematch of a game last year that really like kind of marked the beginning of this sort of downfall of the Rams offense that we've seen. So the Rams offense, if you remember them, you know, beating Mahomes in that ridiculous 55-50 shootout. Looked like the next greatest show on turf. And I mean, they were phenomenal for weeks and weeks. And they ran into Chicago last year. And Chicago, we didn't think it was possible, but Chicago just shut them down. Just completely shut them down and beat them. And really, since that game, and that kind of coincided with Todd Gurley not really being Todd Gurley anymore. And since that game, the Rams have really been a middling offense, right? The rest of that season, they had the worst offense, one of the worst offensive performances in Super Bowl history. And this year, very much a middling offense. We both picked them against Pittsburgh this week, not realizing that Jared Goff would come out and set football back 30 years with just an awful performance. I mean, I don't think Goff is bad, but when he throws up a stinker, holy shit, does it stink? Am I right?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. He's definitely 11 touchdowns and 9 interceptions in this day and age. That is a horrific ratio, especially for somebody who just signed a big money contract, getting 30 whatever million. You know, you see guys like Russell Wilson having like 30 TDs, 2 interceptions. That's horrible right there. But there's a lot of factors. You got to give that Steeler defense credit. They are playing. Phenomenal. The Steeler defense really stepped up. Minka Fitzpatrick had a tour de force, quite a game. But and with the Rams, it's just the offensive line. You mentioned Gurley's banged up. He hasn't been the same since he dominated for a year and a half, and he's gone downhill. But their offensive line it just disintegrates. And Goff, he used to have like 3 or 4 weapons to go to, like Watkins. Now he just looks to his boy Cooper Kupp, and Pittsburgh made it a point to take him out the game. So once Kupp was covered, that was it. He doesn't have enough time for that second option because the offensive line is so pitiful, and not giving them anything, and he doesn't have the ability to make plays on his own. He's not that type of quarterback. So
it's
a mixture of a lot of things.
They miss Brandon Cooks, and that he's really the guy who can take the top off the defense. Like, none of their other receivers are real deep threats.
Yep.
So things are congested. Gurley.
Yeah, realize.
I mean, Gurley averaged 6 yards a carry, and I mean, he's just like he mustn't be healthy because they're just not giving him the work, right? Because you would think they would give him the work at this point with their season just falling apart. I really don't see it getting any better. Chicago's defense is a bad matchup for them, but. The problem is for Chicago that Trubisky is a great matchup for any other defense, and the Rams defense did play good against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they're solid. They've been solid all year. The Rams, they're the reason why they're 5-4. Otherwise, they might be 3-6 or whatever.
And know. I mean, like Trubisky against a solid D. I mean, what's the max points that they're going to score? 13, maybe. I mean, it's like it really shapes up to be like a shit game. Like somebody's going to win that game like 13-10, and it's just going to be unwatchable.
No, I'm thinking it's more 20-17. But the
two defensive touchdowns.
Hey, you never know. Well, that's the big difference. See, last year the Bears made Trubisky look a lot better, gave him a lot of shorter fields. The Bears' defense had like a record number of turnovers. This year they're not as larcenous. Because you can't rely on that. A lot of times those turnovers, you know, it's a bounce here or there. It's a lot of breaks. And last year, the Bears, everything fell into their hands. This year, their defense isn't causing as many turnovers. So Mitch has to carry a heavier load. But, yeah, I look for the Rams. I look for the Rams to pull this one out 20-17.
I'm going to pick the Rams, too, with just zero confidence. Stay away from this one, Calvin. Stay away.
Yeah, Goff.
My official prediction. Don't go anywhere near it.
Goff is over relying on Cup, and man, a Steelers game of donut. I know you're not a big Steelers fan, but you gotta be impressed with their defense this year.
Oh yeah, you know what? I mean, I really give Tomlin a lot of credit for
and the organization as a whole. They could have went into the, you know, everybody saying when they lost Ben, oh, they should tank. Or what did they do? They went out and they got Minka Fitzpatrick, and he's pretty much saving their season. It just goes to show that they're one of those organizations. They're like, we're going to try to win it every year, no matter what. Even we lose a quarterback, so what? We lose two quarterbacks, so what? We're still going to. And it turns out that's turned out to be a great trade. Yeah, so what? We're giving you the 20th pick, but we got one of the best defensive players in the league, in Minka Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks really good. A lot of times, those trades don't work out, but when they do, like, I mean, the Cowboys giving up a first for Amari Cooper is another example of a trade that was kind of criticized when it happened that has worked out pretty well.
For both teams.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, again, I think a great job by Tomlin, really tailoring that offense to a quarterback that's really not ready to be a starter in the NFL. So doing a lot of creative running stuff, really trying to limit like what he has to do. And yeah, all credit to him. And they're really in the driver's seat now for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and with that, they got a tough one tomorrow night versus the Brownies.
We know which way you're going.
The Brownies are going to make it two in a row.
They proved you right, finally, after 6 weeks. So the Browns... Browns got a nice win against Buffalo.
Nice win, unless you count their goal line offense.
I was going to say, it's another one where, like, I mean, that was just awful. 8 plays from the 2-yard line, you can't fucking get in.
Hey, at least they tried to, they targeted Odell, who only had he only had 3 targets the whole season before. I think he had a 3 on 1 drive, and he kept getting pass interferences, and then...
What I will say about the Browns is Kareem Hunt looked phenomenal. Chubb, I mean, that's a hell of a two-headed running back. Because Kareem Hunt's like a feature back, like a really good feature back. And he looked like him. He looked fast and ready. So to have him as like your change of pace to Chubb, especially for a quarterback that's struggling as mightily as Baker Mayfield is, having that little security blanket that you can go to out of the backfield, I think is going to be really helpful for him.
Yeah. And
it's another good guy in the locker room for Cleveland.
Come on.
So they're
they probably stepped up and won the game at home, but it took it was kind of overlooked, but it took a miraculous catch. That catch by Landry. Right before the touchdown to Higgins.
Oh, yeah.
Where he like did like a 360 turnaround. That was kind of a miracle play. Otherwise, they might not have even scored. And you'd have been talking to the soup kitchens. It would have been hot in the kitchen.
He's a real. I mean, Landry's a real player, and Mayfield very clearly has a better chemistry with him than with Beckham.
Yeah. If they could have a do over, because they got guys like. Higgins, et cetera. They got a lot, and Callaway, who had a personal issue, issue where he was suspended. But still they got some talent, and they got Njoku coming back. If they got a do over, they would have skipped on the Odell trade.
I agree.
I'm sure.
Well, he hasn't been super impactful for them, you know, like for the headache that he is. So. So with all that said, John, how much are the Browns going to win that game by on Thursday night?
Pretty much the same score, 19-17.
He likes them every week.
I don't like Mason Rudolph too much. I think Cleveland's defense, Myles Garrett's going to force a turnover or two. It's going to carry the Browns to victory.
All right. We'll see.
They're staying in the hunt.
Because, you know, I mean, the Browns are guaranteed to turn the ball over at least twice, right? And get stopped at the 1-yard line once, guaranteed. So they're going to have to overcome that. We'll see what happens. I think, you know, I mean, if you look personnel-wise, the Browns just have it all over the Steelers. But on the sidelines, and then just like from a character perspective, I just think that that's going to carry the day for the Steelers. You know, the going gets tough and the Browns lose the game. That's kind of how it works for me.
And another thing, getting back to the Steelers, pretty soon, TJ Watt is JJ Watt is going to be
TJ's brother.
Known, exactly.
Yeah, very good player. I mean, he's a heck of a pass rusher. They have a really good defense. I mean, Fitzpatrick really was what they needed. I mean, it's an incredible talent evaluation job by their team to bring him in. What an impact he's had. Hey, Johnny.
What else we got?
We got Jacksonville at Indy. Indy back coming off a bad loss. Brissett, it looks like Brissett is going to play. Thank God. Because Hoyer should be bagging groceries over at Publix. I mean, he was awful. I mean, you usually like point to different things. I mean, he cost them that game. I mean, Miami sucks. And Miami, I mean, they only scored 16 points. How Indy only puts up 12 against Miami's awful defense, you know?
I mean, yeah, and also Vinatieri, the extra point. They could have tied it. Instead of down by four, they could have tied it up with a field goal.
It shouldn't come down to that against the Dolphins at home.
And I think they outsmarted themselves because Brissett was. I think they said we're gonna, you know, they took a chance. They said
like that he probably could have played. I had that feeling too.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, we could beat the because Hoyer didn't play bad. In the game before, Hoyer for like a game or two could look like an NFL quarterback, but once it gets to like 2-3 games in a row.
But I mean, especially without T.Y. Hilton too. Like I mean, Hoyer's not the kind of guy that's going to make like these other weapons better. That's a bad loss. So this is a huge game for both teams, but really, really for the Colts. What do you got?
Yeah, with Brissett coming back and Foles probably going to be a little rusty. So I would love for the Jags to pull it out. So my 8-8 will look a lot better.
I was just going to say that, John.
It will bring both teams.
We're on the same line, so. So if Jacksonville wins, okay, and if Baltimore beats Houston, very possible, these things. We have the Texans on top of the division at
6-4.
And the other three teams are 5-5.
Oh, my God.
Man, if you hit that, if you nail that, you could. I mean, you know what you would have to do and what Vegas would have paid you for that one?
Yeah. I wonder what the odds were, but yeah, but also that was in Tennessee with the victory over KC. It was
exciting. Led game.
Led by Tannehill.
Exciting game. I have a couple of thoughts there. One, I mean, how awful is Marcus Mariota? I mean, we know that I think I said this last week, but now, I mean, it's even more now, right? Because we know what Ryan Tannehill is, right? Ryan Tannehill, at best, is a slightly below average NFL quarterback, and he's like been worse than that. He's been like a bottom five kind of starter in the league. That switching from Mariota to him has lit such a fire under this team. That, I mean, they're winning a shootout against the Chiefs. I mean, Mariota should never start another game in the NFL. He should be playing in the XFL. That's what I think. My other takeaway, and Ryan Tannehill made some great plays in this game, especially with his legs, and especially being like a tough son of a bitch, taking on tacklers and stuff to get extra yards. He was really good. Henry was really good.
Yeah, he ran right through that guy for that big 2-point conversion, which it turns out, you know, Buckner would have been going for the game winning field goal instead of just the tie in the game. It was moot because it got blocked anyway. But that was a big play, that 2-point conversion.
Oh, huge, huge! And I mean, yeah. Like you said, I mean, he just ran the guy over. And my other takeaway, which is no big surprise to anybody, is Kansas City's defense. With everything I just said, Tennessee's offense has been middling at best. And, I mean, the offense puts – KC's offense puts up 32 points. Mahomes throws for 450 yards. And that's not enough to beat the Titans. I mean, it's just an ugly, ugly defense that they have. And it's I'm not saying they can't come out of the AFC because they can out-shoot out anybody. But, I mean, to just have a defense that forces your offense to score 40 points to win every game is just – it just sucks.
Yeah, Derrick Henry had a lot of open space.
He did. He did. But we get – so Tennessee bye week this week. Kansas City in really what's a must-win game because if the goddamn Raiders win this division, I think I can never come on this show – again, the Raiders are only a half game back. So, Kansas City versus the Chargers in Mexico City at Estadio Azteca on Monday night. This stadium, if you remember last year, they were going to play here, and it was like, what was it, the day of the game or the day before the game? It was determined the stadium was too jacked up, and they ended up playing it at the last second in Los Angeles. They played it at like a college stadium, right, in Los Angeles?
Yes, I remember now. Oh, God, it was dangerous. Yeah, the field was a disaster.
We haven't heard anything about that. So, neutral field, the Chargers coming off another fucking Chargers special against the Raiders on Thursday night where they, you know, deftly snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. 0 for 7 with a pick on one drive. You gotta like the Chiefs, right? Even as bad as their defense is, and as much as I can see a scenario where the Chargers can come out and Melvin Gordon can run wild and they can win the game 35-32 just like the Titans did. I mean, they have a better offense than the Titans. I gotta say I like the Chiefs to win this game on the neutral field. But I think it's a bit of a coin flip, honestly. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Chargers came out and won. But I'm going to go with Mahomes. I'm going to go with talent. Talent wins out on the offensive side of the ball, even though you're putting out a high school defense.
I'm going the same way. And the same thing. I think it's going to be close. And the Chargers are definitely going to put up some points.
But it's like... You just gotta
put up a few more. Yeah.
Until they prove otherwise, you gotta think that if it's a close game, the Chargers are gonna figure out a way to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's kind of that's their thing.
Comes down to a fading Rivers versus Mahomes is one of the best in the biz. And,
right. So you gotta think for the Chargers to win, they gotta win by like double digits. Where they're in control in the fourth quarter, where they don't have like any real high pressure stuff going on that they can screw up.
Yeah,
and I don't see that happening. So, John, I think we did a pretty good look ahead there for Sunday and
that was
Thursday.
Real good,
and. You got anything going on here at Place to Be Nation, John, while I look at what else we have going on?
Well, I'm sure it'll be on your thing, but we did an extra show. I think it's called Looking Forward, Looking Back.
We did.
A lot of fun with you. Check that out. We looked back at the Major League Baseball season. I talked about Juan Soto. I forgot his name. I have to apologize again. I got him mixed up with Victor Robles. But we looked back, and then we looked ahead to the great basketball season, which is off to a roaring start, where Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets are struggling. The Celtics have the best record in the league, and my Knicks are playing like a G League team. another team that's about to get the, you know, they blame it on the coach. You know, terrible organization. What are you going to do?
Hey, man.
But listen to that. Good, a lot of fun with that episode. Good episode.
It was. And so we have a lot of other great stuff going on here at Place to Be Nation. First of all, on the Pop Feed, the Sarcastic Four are back with the latest episode of the Marvel Age podcast, where they continue their look at roughly one-third of the most significant of Marvel's output throughout the year 1972. Scott Criscolo and Jennifer Smith wrapped up October in our month-long tribute to Halloween with What a Scream, the History of Horror in America special. The hard-traveling fanboys go on a long book hunt and venture into Elseworlds with James Robinson's The Golden Age. DC for You take a wild trip down memory lane with guest Greg Phillips as they discuss the seminal Geoff Johns book, Green Lantern Rebirth. As John said, this week in the NFL and looking forward, looking back this week with John and myself, looking at both the NFL, NBA, and taking a look back at the Major League Baseball season. We had a great time doing that. Siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast on episode 24. They bring you The Office season 3, episodes 19 and 20. On the newest Diamond Conversations, the fourth episode features a one-on-one chat with EVP and GM of the Fredericksburg Nationals, Nick Hall. And the moment we've all been waiting for is almost here as the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament kicks off on Monday, November 25th, beginning with the play-in round. There will be four matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament page so you won't miss a single one. And as has been the case, I'm going to pump my show, Sledgehammer. The bracket came out. Sledgehammer is the 50 seed. And they have what should be a cakewalk matchup in the play-in round here. I told Andy Atherton, the guy running our you know, double A, our buddy running the tournament, that I thought it was an absolute joke that Sledgehammer had to play a play-in game. But I think he gave him a cake matchup. So get out, vote for Sledgehammer, vote for the rest of your shows as well. Another favorite of mine in the play-in round that you know, maybe a little bit of a dark horse, Herman's Head, show that I really enjoyed. So get out and vote for Sledgehammer and Herman's Head. You got any that you want to pump, John?
No, I wasn't a big Herman's Head fan, but definitely a
really?
Big Sledge fan.
Yeah. I was younger. I think I was probably like 11 years old when that came out, when Herman's Head came out. So different set,
yeah.
different humor.
The 90s are rough for me. A lot of old work and no play.
Makes John a dull
good
boy.
Stuff, yeah. Well, I was, yeah.
Over at the PTVN Wrestling feed, on the premiere episode of Body Press Your Luck, Place to Be Nation's first ever wrestling trivia game show, hosts Justin Rosero and Jordan Duncan welcome Ryan Everett, Neil Trauma, and Logan Crossland to battle it out. If you think you have what it takes to be a main eventer on the show, reach out to us and you may be on a future episode. The latest episode of the Place to Be podcast, JT and Scott are joined by Peter Winston to dig into the fallout from the Royal Rumble by looking at Saturday night's main event from January 27th, 1990. On part one of the main event, Nate and Scott preview AEW's Full Gear and Impact's Turning Point. Then Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Tim Capel get together on the latest main event special, AEW Full Gear Reaction Show, to break down and give their analysis. We dive back inside the vault as Parv and Chad deliver a review of Great American Bash 1988 in this classic edition of Where the Big Boys Play. Row 1, Seat 1, number 28. Ben hosts PTBN's own JT Rosero, chronicling his history as a wrestling fan in the founding and growth of Place to Be Nation. In our newest show, With This Ring, husband and wife Ryan and Cindy look at five matches and discuss where they place on Ryan's GWWE match list as well as Cindy's personal list. On the latest PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, John, and Jenny continue their ECW adventure with three episodes of ECW Hardcore TV from June of 1994. How's
yes,
that
sir.
One, John?
Yes, sir. Cranking them out biweekly.
Last but not least, subscribe to the Jenny Position, the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and more. Don't forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including the SmackDown on Fox report this week in the WWE, Jason's DVD deep dive, and Ben's unpopular opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like every Wednesday. We've got the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories on the World Wide Web in Glenn's Weekly Walk. And for college football fans, Scott Criscolo and Logan Crossland have their weekly Campus Hot Takes, looking back at the previous week and looking ahead to the biggest matchups. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. Ballots are now open and the ballot link is available on the Facebook group page. That's what I got, John. So a lot of great content. Everybody enjoy it. We'll be back next week to talk how week 11 went and preview week 12. Any parting shots, John?
I can't wait, Raj. No, I'll just keep saying what we've been saying. No bye weeks.
No bye weeks, baby. No bye weeks. Never a bye week again, John. This is my favorite part of my week is talking to you, my friend.
All right. Don't make promises you can't keep. Sometimes life gets in the way.
This is true. But you're so flexible. I always change things. You always say, "Yep, that's good. Yep, yep, okay, good. Yep." So we have a good. It's a good team.
Yes, sir.
All right. So for Mr. D'Amato, I'm the Cowboy. I'm out.
Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.